Now, earlier this year, Hanny and I were in Bali, and one night we were walking beside a river near my hotel and we heard this. And my immediate thought was that the undergrowth was full of animal musicians. Now, I don't know what these are. There'll be someone listening who knows whether these are frogs or geckos or whatever they are, but it was so loud. And in mono, you can't hear this, but really there would be a frog over one side calling and then one on the other side would be replying. It was as if they were jamming away, having a really good time. So could we think about these animals as artists? At some level, is that art? Now, that's the central question in Human-Animal Artist, Art Inspired by Animals, which features the work of 25 artists at the McClelland Sculpture Park and Gallery, which is at Lang Warren on the edge of Melbourne, and it's curated by Janine Burke. You are so busy at the moment.
It is a quite extraordinary time, yes.
We just won't let you go. You'll just have to stay here for weeks on end. And also one of the artists is Ty Snaith.
Hello.
Welcome.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
What's your first impulse, Ty, when you hear those frogs and whatnot, whatever they are, banging away?
I love them. As a kid, I was obsessed with frogs. They were like my best friends.
Oh, yeah?
Growing up, I had a collection at my parents' farm and I just loved them. They were like closer to me than my family, really. I love frogs. Particularly, frogs are great.
You are going live to air, you know.
I know.
You've just said that that frogs are closer to air than your family.
Yeah. They were when I was a kid. My family know that. I would spend night times with a bucket walking down to the dam picking up frogs.
Your family's processed this information.
Yeah, they've lived with it.
So now this idea that sound was art. Would you go with that?
Yeah, I think so. I think it depends on how you process art as a human, what you call art.
Well, sure.
But I think that definitely a lot of animals have an aesthetic sense of things like balance, composition, colour, and I think you can attribute all of those notions to an artist. That's what we do also. Yeah. A lot of animals collect according to those things.
But we could be just taking a human activity and imposing it on animals. Animals may have their own reasons for behaving like this, mightn't they?
That's true.
A frog expert might say, well, don't be ridiculous. They're not having a jam session. They're marking territory.
But no, it's usually to attract a mate. And then you could extrapolate that as humans, why do we have these artistic practices? Is that also to attract a mate? Because in a lot of cases it is.
Yes, sometimes explicitly. We sing a love
song.
That's right. Be my baby.
Or we collect a series of objects that are pretty attractive to a lady or a man.
Yeah. Mm. I thought of you the other day, Janine, because you introduced me to this idea with bird's nests.
You had
a show about bird's nests.
That's right.
When you laid them all out, you know, in a big line, you thought, well, yes, they are a little bit like the sort of weaving that, you know, artists might do, basket weavers might do. And I found a nest the other day.
Oh, great.
And it fell out of the kumquat tree when I was pruning it. It was abandoned. It was obviously an old one. And I put it on the table there, our outside table, and thought, there's a Janine Burke work of art. And a day later, along comes a big bird and just rips it apart. And I thought, well, you're no respecter of art. If this is art...
You're an iconoclast.
You must be a philistine.
That's right.
Well, that bird probably saw some things that it needed for its own nest, so it was attracted to that nest that you found. Yeah.
You see. But then, as I watched this bird, I let nature do its thing. I saw this happen. I saw this sacrilege take place on the outside table. And I thought, all right, since you're, you know, closer to the bird world than I am, maybe that's not a work of art. That's what I thought.
Maybe, yeah.
Well, yeah, and hang on, you're supposed to defend the proposition.
Okay.
You're the case for this being art. You can't fold this
No, I'm not folding. I think that works by selected animals can be deemed works of art. And I think, you know, even David Attenborough, now talking about bowerbirds, regards them and says that they're works of art. But I traced my ideas back to Darwin, really, who first talked about selected animals as having a taste for the beautiful, a taste for more than just a utilitarian object such as a nest. They decorate, they think about what they're doing, they have consciousness, they have awareness. And so what this exhibition explores are artists who are using the works of animals to make their own works. Mm. So there are artists looking at termite mounds. There are artists looking at coral reefs and crustaceans. There's a whole range of spider webs, you know, and how these works are informing the artist's own practice. And this was one of the lovely things about working on this show, was contacting artists like Ty and many of the other artists in the exhibition, John Wolseley, there are, you know, many, many names, whose deepest level their work was about respecting, revering and learning from animals.
What animals do. So, Ty Snaith, let's talk some more to you. So you've got a work in the show called Mertz Bauer.
Which is a play on words, really. If anyone knows the work of Kurt Schwitters, a famous Dada artist, he made a work called Mertz Bauer, but it was a house. It was spelt B-A-U-E-R, right. Bauer. Yeah.
What I know about Kurt Schwitters is he was famous for doing weird things with his voice like this.
Sounds like...
Hang on, don't interrupt this. Not that different from those frogs we were just listening to.
Yeah, he definitely embraced some kind of primal animalistic urge, which I find just utterly inspiring in artists.
Okay, so that feeds into the work you've made. So tell us more about this work you've made.
So it's a collection of objects that I have both found and made over the past probably 2 years is the span of the objects in the nest, in the bower. And they're all from my studio, from my house, from my life, but they're all within a colour palette of pastel.
And how big is this bower you've created, this nest?
It's about 4 metres by 4 metres on the floor.
Oh,
all
vast.
On the floor. It's quite vast.
So
yeah.
Do we as the audience walk around it? Or
yes, that's right.
Yeah. We look at it from afar?
From above, really, yeah. So in the same way that a bower bird, what they do is they collect a series of grey stones or twigs to put at the base of their stage or their bower, and then they put the prize objects on top. And different bowerbirds collect different colours. You know, the satin bowerbird collects blues, but there is some other colour palettes that are around, like the spotted bowerbird. And I have a series of grey ceramic fragments underneath, and then on top are the other objects, the pastel objects. So there's all sorts of weird things from my life. Like there's a cast of my mouth from my dentist that... when I had to have a plate made for my mouth, you know, I don't know if you've ever had to do that, but they have to cast it in the dental stuff.
Yes, when I played rugby, I had to have a mouth guard made by process. Yes.
So, you know, the thing, the remnant, so the it's like a pale pink, like a pastel pink. And when he gave it back to me, he said, oh, you can either leave this with me or you could have it. And I said, oh, could I please have it? And I took it home and I just instinctively painted other pastel colours on it, as is my wont in my studio, lots of different bits and pieces. And then I lost my mouth guard because a dog decided to chew it up at a holiday house. And then I went back to my dentist and I said, I need another plate made.
Another animal that's a non-respecter of art, note.
And he, yes,
I'm
that's
asking
not,
the hard questions
right.
here this morning. I'm being sceptical.
I'm not sure if dentistry is art, but yeah. But
no,
then,
but you transformed it into art because you're an artist. Anything
that's
you touch becomes, by a Duchampian miracle,
yes, but,
a work of art.
But what happened was then my dentist said, oh, great, well, you've still got the cast, so just bring it back in. So I had to sheepishly bring this painted thing back in, and he looked at me and said, oh, there's always a first. So that's in the collection. There's also a couple of little, there's lots of different things. You need to go and see it. But it's basically a very instinctive collection from my life and my practice, in the same way that a bowerbird would array and collect all different types of things.
Array. That's a nice word.
Arrange, really. An arrange and array.
Stick with array. This is Books and Arts and RN. I'm talking to Ty Smith, the artist Ty Smith, and to art curator Janine Burke, who just won't leave the building. Because she's put together an exhibition about, well, based on the idea that artists, no, that animals in some sense can be thought of as making art.
And I think it's interesting you started off with the frogs, because there's an extraordinary artist who's also a professor of philosophy and a clarinetist and a composer, David Rothenberg, who's based in New York, who jams with birds and records them. And there's this marvellous moment that's recorded on video, and the video's in the exhibition, where he's playing his clarinet to a thrush in an aviary in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And you see this moment where the bird is listening to him and begins to sing back to the clarinet. And this kind of lovely rapport between the human artist and the animal, in inverted commas, artist begins. He wrote a wonderful book called Why Birds Sing and released a CD of the same name. And that music is playing in the foyer. So people come in and they'll be listening to David Rothenberg jamming with a lyrebird in the Lamington National Park in Queensland, which is something else that he did. And they're really haunting and beautiful and lovely duets.
I think the reason I'm sceptical about this is because I once tried playing my recorder to the magpies. No response.
No, they're not like that. You could try a raven. They might be a little
bit more.
Yes, a raven.
A raven with a recorder.
Also, it depends how good you are on a recorder.
Oh, thank you very much.
That's very true. They may not, they may not dig you.
They're critics. As well as artists.
They're very critical.
Yeah.
I can't let you go without you telling me about Jason Decares Taylor.
Isn't his work brilliant? He's a British sculptor who came up with this marvellous idea, and that was to place life-size sculptures on the ocean floor in the West Indies. Now, the sort of push behind that for him was to give the local coral reefs a bit of a break as a tourist and a dive destination, and create a new coral reef to work with the crustaceans to put these life-size human statues down there and allow the crustaceans to do their thing. And the video that's in the exhibition of this is really so haunting and evocative and beautiful when you look at these bizarre shapes and colours that the coral has created. So it's a really good example of the kind of humble way that the artists in this exhibition work with nature. They don't come in at it with the kind of, we're top of the ladder, we're the humans. They're looking carefully at what animals offer and saying, what they're offering me is really what I have to humble myself before. That's what I like about it.
Now, listen, if you go along to the website, you can see Jason Decares Taylor's crustacean work, can we call it that?
Indeed.
There's some pictures there. And also Ty Snaith's Bower is there, I think, on our website as well. So there's lots to look at.
And
there.
I did notice, I don't know if you saw it, Janine, but in The Age last weekend, Michael Lunig's cartoon was about wanting to be more creaturely. And I think that's what it is for a lot of us, is I'm really quite disgusted by most humans. And I really respect the way that animals have lived for so many thousands of years on the earth without making much of an impact or in harmony, you know. They also have a humbleness about being not the top of the pecking order. There's always someone above animals, and they respect that and they work within their realms. Whereas humans, we just don't seem to have that anymore. We just do whatever we like and we don't consider the consequences a lot of the time. So I'd prefer to be more creaturely in my ways too, I think.
There are nice people and nasty people, Ty. I think it's important to affirm what's good in humanity. I can't walk that road with you. You know? I think it's important
to
say
more creaturely
there
too,
are
Michael.
Great capacities in human beings, just as there are great capacities in Australians for tolerance and inclusiveness and embracing other people. We mustn't let the conversation ever become our species or our race or our nationalism is of a repellent kind.
No, but
because
we can learn from
animals.
These
are battles for values.
We can. And I think that's what a lot of this show is about, is us not pretending that we're superior in any way, but we can learn from things that are supposedly lower than us.
Well, Janine, we so often say, as we wind up, we so often say, what is it that separates us from the animals? Oh, we're tool makers, or we're aware of our own mortality.
Exactly.
But your whole premise, gift actually to the rest of us, is let's think about the ways in which we like animals.
Yes, indeed. And instead of placing ourselves above them, let's place them above us for a little while in terms of their production, their work, their aesthetic, what they've created.
Janine Burke, thank you for being my guest. It's been fantastic having you on the show.
Thank you very much, Michael.
And Ty.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming
nice to
in.
See
Ty
you again.
Snaith. Ty Snaith's an artist and children's book illustrator and author. And tell me what you think. Do animals make art? Send us a photo of animal art, even. Tell us on Facebook or Twitter. So the show's called Human Animal Artist, Art Inspired by Animals. You can find it at the McClelland Sculpture Park and Gallery, which is just outside Melbourne, until the 19th of February.